This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
This thing is at least 10 times more dangerous than flu, and possibly as high as 50 times more dangerous than flu. It puts people in hospital, including young people, and it kills people at a much, much higher rate.
That's Professor Francois Venter, one of South Africa's most respected virologists, on his thoughts on COVID-19. Details coming up also. Separatists in Cameroon kill at least 26 people over the weekend. And Zimbabwe extends its coronavirus lockdown for another 2 weeks. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Cameroonian officials say separatists have killed at least 26 people over the weekend, including local officials who called for the formation of militias to fight the rebels. Cameroon's military says it retaliated, killing a number of separatists. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Cameroon's military says on Saturday and Sunday, Anglophone rebels launched simultaneous attacks in several villages in the English-speaking western regions. Mayor of Cameroon's northwestern Touba district, Martin Tanjong, says the fighters appeared to be targeting local authorities, but also killed at least 6 civilians. Speaking from Touba via a messaging application, Tanjong says the rebels are angry at officials for organizing militias to fight them.
The chairman of Zanda Council of Bamili Community and his secretary were removed from their houses and their schools shattered. We, some of the elites, are really under heavy threat on phones and social media.
Also in the last week, Cameroonian officials say rebel fighters killed a deputy mayor of the northwestern Mwa district for collaborating with authorities. Speaking from Mwa via a messaging application, official Jeanette Shayson says fighters killed 7 civilians alongside the deputy mayor.
We plead to the government to put an end to all this chaos. It makes us feel bad and afraid to even do our job. I am sorry, I regret for the loss of this deputy mayor and his gentle soul rest in perfect peace.
Cameroon's Minister of the Supreme State Office, Mba Acha Rose, says her delegation was visiting the town of Bengui and got caught up in the attacks.
The attack was about 4 places. The newly elected mayor was kidnapped, and we want to keep pleading with the boys in the bush to come out. When they come out, they'll be forgiven. We just want them to drop their guns. They're our children. They're our brothers and our sisters. They should come out. We want to preach for peace.
The rebels on social media claimed responsibility for the attacks and have repeatedly threatened those they accuse of collaborating with the majority French-speaking state. Cameroon's military, in a press release, said it retaliated and claimed it killed many rebels without giving any numbers. Both sides in the 3-year conflict routinely accuse the other of suffering more losses in battle and being responsible for the deaths of civilians. Rights groups say both the rebels and Cameroon's military have committed atrocities in the conflict. The rebels have since 2017 been fighting to create an independent English-speaking state in Cameroon's western regions. The United Nations says the conflict has cost Cameroon more than 3,000 lives and displaced more than 500,000 people to French-speaking regions or neighboring Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
With a 21-day lockdown set to expire last night, Zimbabwe's government extended the restrictions for 2 weeks, creating further anxiety for people eager to return to their usual way of life. Reporter Kutsai Zanawashi has more details.
President Emmerson Mnangagwa announced the lockdown extension yesterday, indicating worries about the growing number of COVID-19 cases in Zimbabwe and in the world.
As I have also already indicated, worldwide cases of infections continue to gallop, with the World Health Organization cancelling against relaxing lockdowns currently adopted by almost all countries of the world. Guided by these realities and to allow ourselves greater leeway to prepare for worse times which are likely ahead, government has decided to extend with immediate effect the national lockdown by a further 14 days.
He adds that it was not an easy decision to make.
It has been a very hard decision my government has had to take reluctantly, but it has been a necessary and unavoidable decision in the circumstances in which we find ourselves.
Zimbabweans expressed mixed feelings online over the extension. Tulani Mswelanto is with Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition, a local pro-democracy non-profit organization. He explains the root of the mixed feelings.
Zimbabwe is in a catch-22 situation where it is very desirable and noble to extend the lockdown, given the fact that we are not prepared to deal with the pandemic. We also have a serious question around the livelihoods question.
He says Zimbabwe's largely informal sector makes the lockdown extension a difficult decision to follow for many.
Most of our people live on a daily basis by selling their wares and doing menial jobs. Our informal sector employs almost 90% of our citizens. The moment that they do not go to work, then it means that they will not be able to fend for their families.
Many face the choice between hunger and the risk of infection from a virus they know little about. Mswelanto says they have been running battles and hide-and-seek between authorities and informal sector workers defying the lockdown regulations. Police say they have arrested over 2,000 people who defied the original lockdown order. The government has said it is rolling out a $600 million facility that will be disbursed to families in need in the coming 3 months. Mnangagwa says officials will be scaling up testing and contact tracing. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashi from Harare.
Ghana has lifted a 3-week partial lockdown in major cities over the coronavirus, one of the first African countries to ease such restrictions. Some Ghanaians say they fear the restrictions are being lifted too soon, while struggling shop owners and daily wage workers were already back at work as the lift took effect Monday. Stacey Knott reports from the capital, Accra.
President Nana Akufo-Addo announced an end to the partial lockdown in a televised address late Sunday. Akufo-Addo said the nation is not letting down its guard against the pandemic. Public gatherings are still banned, schools remain closed, and social distancing measures continue. The borders will remain closed for a further 2 weeks to stop the virus from entering the country. He said Ghana was taking action to protect its people from the virus, but was using an approach which suits the country.
We shall be nimble and adapt as the situation changes. We will tailor our solutions to our unique social, economic, and cultural conditions. There is no one-size-fits-all approach, but I pledge to you, the government will do whatever is required in our particular circumstances to safeguard the lives of our people and keep our economy going.
Reaction to the speech was mixed. Many on social media say the move is premature. Ghana has seen more than 1,000 cases of coronavirus to date, although the death toll has been low, with only 9 fatalities. Ernest Ajebadu, who sells television sets in Accra, says he is pleased the lockdown is over. He has spent the time in Kumasi, which was also in a partial lockdown. On Monday morning, he took a bus back to the capital so he could return to work.
There were a lot of issues. I had imported a lot of TVs and they were all locked up in the warehouse and nothing was going on. And so I personally didn't support the lockdown. I have workers. How am I going to pay them when I'm not selling? And so it was a big problem.
To try to relieve suffering from the lockdown and ongoing pandemic, Ghana is providing food for the vulnerable in free or subsidised electricity. It has also borrowed $1 billion from the International Monetary Fund to help close the financing gap created by the pandemic. William Nyako is the Executive Director of the Africa Centre for International Law and Accountability, a non-partisan research group. He says the impact of the lockdown is significant as Ghana's economy is largely informal and people rely on daily wages. Nyako says he would have preferred incremental steps in lifting the lockdown to avoid further spread of the virus.
An incremental approach would have been that he would lift the restrictions in phases like he did when he was doing a partial lockdown. So, for example, he could have lifted the restrictions for 2 weeks and then would be monitoring to assess how things were going.
As the streets return to life in Accra, Ghana's government has said it will keep a clear focus on the situation and continue testing contacts of positive cases. So far, it has traced 86,000 contacts and tested 68,591 of them, of which 1.5% have come back as positive. Stacey Knott for VOA News, Accra.
Violence broke out yesterday in Niamey, the capital of the Sahel nation, Niger, over the government's anti-coronavirus curfew. The French news agency AFP reports protests erupting in various parts of the city. Security forces used tear gas to disperse a crowd of people who wanted to hold prayers in a mosque. Niger is one of the world's poorest countries so far. It has recorded 648 cases of the COVID-19 since March, of which 20 have been fatal. Some Nigerian political analysts believe President Muhammadu Buhari will miss his chief of staff, who was a very close confidant and played a significant role in the government.
Abakiyari died Friday from COVID-19 after contracting it in March during an official visit to Germany and Egypt. Kiyari had been widely seen as a close confidant to Buhari. After the 2019 election, Buhari directed all ministers, government appointees and functionaries to first see his chief of staff before meeting him. Some Nigerians believed the move gave the chief of staff more power than any other office holder. Akaraiwe Ikazo, former first vice president of the Nigeria Bar Association, says Kiyari was the most significant and powerful chief of staff in Nigeria's Fourth Republic.
We have a man who could be described as de facto prime minister of Nigeria, in that the sitting president of Nigeria appears to have been the minister sidelined. That is the perception anyway, and perception is reality. The go-to man in government, at least the president issued a statement asking all ministers to go through the chief of staff before they came to him.
Ikazo says Kiari's political legacy will be shrouded in mystery because of his socio-cultural background, in which the ruler does not speak much about himself. Senator Magnus Abe, a former member of the National Assembly, described Kiari as a hard-working man who played a significant role in the government and settled some outstanding issues in the ruling party.
Politically, I wouldn't describe him as a politician, but he was more apolitical than being actively involved in the daily political shenanigans that went on within the system. But his influence, even in politics, was substantial.
Abe says Buhari will miss his former chief of staff because of his contributions to his administration. In a tribute to his aide, Buhari described Kiyari as a true Nigerian patriot who was the best of us. Kiyari trained as a lawyer in Cambridge University. He was appointed as chief of staff to Buhari in 2015. This is Mike Mbonye for VOA News in Lagos.
South Africa remains the African country most affected by the coronavirus in terms of numbers and infections and deaths. The latest statistics reveal that both rates are rising, with confirmed cases of COVID-19 now approaching 3,200 and the virus killing 54 people. A disproportionate number of infections appears to be healthcare workers, such as doctors and nurses, who treated people in the initial stages of the epidemic a few weeks ago. Darren Taylor has the story.
The South African authorities are extremely concerned that COVID-19 is hospitalizing doctors and nurses, thereby removing them from the fight against the virus. The country is already enduring a grave shortage of healthcare workers. In some areas, facilities are closed because of coronavirus outbreaks. Health Minister Zweli Mkhize says one of those is the St. Augustine's Hospital in KwaZulu-Natal province.
It was actually quite a shocking one because we didn't expect that 48 and more could be found in one institution, one facility. A lot of work is being done to make sure we get to the bottom of what happened, but also to make sure we prevent this from happening in any other area.
But the danger remains real, especially because many nurses and doctors aren't wearing protective gear like masks because of critical shortages.
There's lots of healthcare workers with it. I know of 6 or 7 GPs, doctors, specialists.
Professor Francois Venter of Wits University is one of South Africa's most respected virologists.
I have reports from across the country of people starting to move into ICUs and to be hospitalized. I mean, I'm healthy and I am fully aware and I am really scared of getting this thing. So people should be scared. And
then thousands of field workers are moving across the country to screen people to test for COVID-19. Fenter says it's essential that doctors and nurses are tested soon so that if they're infected, they receive treatment that gets them back to work as fast as possible. Epidemiologists are expecting a big increase in infections when South Africa's lockdown ends, probably in 2 weeks' time.
We've all got anticipation, anxiety, and pre-traumatic stress syndrome simply waiting for this thing to happen. We're really lucky in the sense that we have a heads up. We've got about 2 or 3 weeks on the Americans and the Europeans to prepare.
Fenter says South Africa should not think that a jump of a few hundred new infections represents a significant increase.
The testing has been largely located within the private sector. So when people say, oh, it's a thousand, it's increasing exponentially, those numbers don't mean very much at the moment because we've yet to start testing in the townships and in the border communities. This really is very urban.
The scientist is concerned that social media is full of young South Africans saying they're not afraid of COVID-19 because it's just like flu and only kills elderly people.
I think people underestimate how bad flu is. One of my professors told me years ago, said, the way to describe flu is if you're too tired to watch television, you feel too sick to watch TV, then you have flu. If you have a sore throat and you think, oh, okay, I'll just have a day in bed and I'll be okay, that's not flu, that's a cold. Flu is severe and it really knocks you backwards. This thing is at least 10 times more dangerous than flu and possibly as high as 50 times more dangerous than flu. It puts people in hospital, including young people, and it kills people at a much, much higher rate.
Just like the rest of the world, says Fenter, coronavirus has changed South Africa forever, and he's hoping that this change prevents a lot of infections.
We may say people can start going back to work and all the rest of it like they did in China, but I think the social distancing and the hand-washing protocols and things will stay, which is probably a good thing. It's going to protect us from all a host of other things like TB and flu.
Fenter says South Africa's greatest enemies at this stage are, of course, COVID-19 and the complacency that may go along with it if it's accepted as the new normal. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Among its many other effects, the coronavirus pandemic has cut deeply into flower sales. This is being felt in the Netherlands, the center of the global horticulture industry, and in East African flower-exporting countries like Kenya and Ethiopia, where tens of thousands of jobs are increasingly in danger. Martha van der Wolf reports for VOA from Amsterdam.
There is no place in the world where you can find more tulips and roses than in Alsmeer, the world's busiest flower auction just outside of Amsterdam. Each day, thousands of flowers are purchased here and shipped all over the world. But since the coronavirus pandemic began, flower sales have dropped by 50%, says Michel van Schie of the Royal Flora Holland Company.
This is also the period with the most important days for the flower industry, like Valentine's Day, International Women's Day, Mother's Day. So the crisis which we are now facing wouldn't have come at a worse moment than this. Not only there were a lot of unsold flowers, but the flowers that were sold were also sold for very low prices.
That is bad news for Africa's leading flower-growing countries, Kenya and Ethiopia. Flower exporters add about $1 billion annually to the Kenyan economy. But with demand falling sharply, Kenyan exports have dropped by about two-thirds in recent weeks, costing the industry and country millions in revenue. Hosea Machuki is the CEO of the Fresh Produce Exporters Association of Kenya. He says the situation is critical.
And we just hope that when it's all done, that the industries and the companies that are involved in the horticulture industry will be able to spring back to life, at least to continue their business and to keep their employees. We have about 350,000 Kenyans directly employed, and at the moment about 200,000 are likely to lose their jobs on account of loss of business.
Neighboring Ethiopia is the second largest African flower exporter, and the horticulture sector is the country's fourth largest earner of export earnings. But because of COVID-19, Ethiopia is exporting only about 20% of its usual volume. Frank Ammerlaan is a Dutch flower farmer in Ethiopia. He says once Europe was hit with the coronavirus pandemic, the effects were immediately noticeable in Ethiopia.
Majority of our sales stopped suddenly, and that's because of shops in Europe being closed, borders being closed, logistics to give priority for food items and other essential items. So yeah, it was a big shock for us.
Ammerlaan employs about 1,000 people and usually exports 2 million stems a week to the Dutch flower auction. But business has dropped by 30 to 40%, he says. He and other growers would like to keep Ethiopia's estimated 150,000 flower industry workers employed.
Every farm is really very, very strict on their expenditures. So we have also cut all our unnecessary expenditures. However, we always have to see reality. When there's no work anymore, then it will be very difficult to keep the workers employed.
To prevent the Ethiopian flower industry from collapsing and to keep foreign exchange flowing into the country, the government has designated the sector as essential, meaning its companies and workers can keep operating despite the state of emergency measures. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Amsterdam.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. For all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, I'm Yehius Wuhib in Washington, thanking you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation of the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.